the way, I don't care about any of this. Do you care about this?
What I was going to say was, I don't know what you're here to talk about. I'm here to talk about Lady C and nothing else.
I care about Vivian, but like...
Yeah, I kind of do care about this. The thing is, I learned so much. I didn't know anything about Monaco. Am I moving there?
No.
No?
It's the unsafest, safest, non-safe place ever. And you're not a billionaire.
I know. Tell them. Thanks for rubbing it in. Tell them this is a good documentary, though.
Oh, I hated it. I don't even think it's well made. Sorry.
Oh my God, really?
I know, I'm sorry.
Oh, I loved it. All right, this will be a fun one.
I won't be like a miserable bitch the whole time, but like, it's not my favorite doc.
Hi, Jillian Mazzavalli.
Hi, Patrick Hines.
Fam, join the Facebook group. It's the True Crime Obsessed podcast discussion group, but you can only join if you want to meet other like-minded people, if you like having a good time, if you like talking about the episodes, if you like making new friends. So, like, okay. Only join if you like any one or all of those things.
Okay, great.
What are the other things we have to tell them about?
Discord.
Oh, that's your domain.
Yeah, the Disky is a thing that we love. Patrick calls it the Disky. It's Discord. We have all these channels. We talk about the apps, and people, like, share personal things, too. It's great. It's a server, and then we have channels on the server.
Whenever I turn on my computer for the first time, it pops up and I immediately act out because I'm scared because it feels hard to me.
It's not.
Okay, good.
I don't want you to scare other people off from it. Come join us.
It's just Grandpa over here not knowing what's going on. Girl, what are we talking about today?
This is on Netflix. It's called Murder in Monaco.
Yeah.
There is a murder mystery to report to you tonight. The victim, an elusive billionaire banker.
It raises a whole lot of questions, like who wanted him dead and why.
Edmond Safra.
Is unfolding at the favorite playground of the rich and famous Monaco.
Monaco. Oh, God.
Monaco's less than a square mile.
It's a sunny place for shady people.
It's one of the safest countries.
With surveillance in almost every corner of the principality, how could one of the richest men in the world be killed in one of the securest countries in the world?
Who had any benefits for that?
You want to tell me again that you didn't like it?
I just felt like, what are we doing here?
I gotta tell you, watching it the second time through, I really didn't know what to think. There's so many different possibilities of what could have happened, and I had questions along the way that I thought I had answers to, but then I changed my answer to the questions.
Yeah, answers you're not getting. So if you came here for answers today,
for me, you know what this felt like? It felt like a Seth Porges joint. You know, he makes all those amazing. He made like Class Action Park and SantaCon and what's the bank robbery? How to Rob a Bank?
Yeah.
So good.
I love his docs.
Yeah, but not this one.
This is not his.
Well, we open with the investigator. Her name is Isabel Vincent. She gets sued all the time.
Well, she works for the New York Post.
Yeah, she's like an investigative reporter for the New York Post. I didn't know they had those.
Investigative reporting.
I know.
Which they don't do. But she says, she's like, I keep their legal department in business. And I'm like, well, it is the New York Post. I feel like their legal department is busy with or without Isabel. Isabel, I know what she's trying to say.
Very,
but like,
very busy.
Come on.
Well, she says that she spent all of these years trying to figure out what happened to this guy named Edmond Safra. She says it was just such a mystery that was never fully explained.
Well, he's like crazy, crazy, crazy rich. He's a billionaire.
Yeah. And so we're going to learn he was a literal billionaire, one of the 20 richest people in the world, living in a place called Monaco, which I did not realize was smaller than one square mile.
Mm-hmm.
But
tiny.
On the night of the crime, it's reported, and we're going to get more into this later, but here are the details.
On the night of the crime, it's reported that masked intruders break into Edmond Safra's Monaco penthouse and try to kidnap or kill him. Edmond and his nurse lock themselves inside an armored panic room. The intruders are unable to penetrate the penthouse and set the penthouse ablaze.
They set the penthouse on fire.
This 10,000 square foot penthouse on fire. Firefighters and police burst into the panic room, find Edmond seated in a red chair, dead, with his nurse at his feet. Like,
and her name is Vivian Torrente. She is maybe one of the most innocent.
No question.
She's collateral damage. This is horrible.
But I was like, this is the most, that's the billionaire-iest thing I've ever heard. He's like dead in the red wingback chair and she's dead at his feet.
Like, this poor woman is like just trying to be a fucking nurse.
Yes.
So the questions are like, who are the intruders? What happened? How did they die? What is the motive? Like, what happened here?
I love how much you hate it. You're trying so hard. I love it so much.
Like, I'm supposed to give a shit about like Russian oligarchs and billionaires and like
no, but it's kind of a good story. There's lots of people to hate. Okay.
Do we? Right. Is that not just Listen, like any given day these days?
You know what? On Patreon right now, we're doing the Philadelphia Mafia. That's a very heavy lift for you. I'll do the lifting here because I kind of enjoyed this.
Okay, I'm glad you did. And yeah. We'll get to my like confusion with what we're doing here later on.
Okay.
I think it's a valid question.
Yeah.
Again, I will not be a miserable bitch this
No, not at all. We learned about Safra. He was he's Lebanese-born from a wealthy Jewish banking family. Forbes called him one of the 200 richest. Oh, I got it wrong. One of the 200 richest, not one of the 20th. Is there a difference?
Well, it's one of the world. He's on the cover of Forbes, the world's 200 richest men. And I'm like, is there a list for women or just general people?
No, women don't. Like, they're not allowed to make money.
That's right. Small brains and weak arms.
Exactly.
I keep forgetting. But even his wealth is kind of mysterious.
Mystery has always surrounded Safra and his business dealings. His specialty, private banking for extremely wealthy clients.
He had many high-powered clients, Hollywood actors, politicians, even the royal family of Monaco.
Mr. Safra is my banker.
He was very good friends with celebrities.
We're in the money.
Hollywood actors, politicians, the royal family of Monaco, and there's Bette Midler singing We're in the Money on stage, bragging about how she's this guy's client or whatever.
Now, listen, we go to this castle. We meet this woman, Lady Colin Campbell, friend of the Safras. She is a grump.
Lady C, she hates you.
Now,
she hates this. She hates everything.
So, like, she's just here. The thing is, like, she's only in this document. She doesn't really give us anything. She's just here because she's grumpy, demanding, doesn't want to be here, storms out of the interview, then decides to come back.
Do you want anything to drink?
No, thank you. I want this over with as quickly as possible. Start.
All right.
Okay.
Could you introduce yourself to us?
No.
No, thank you. I want this over as quickly as possible. Start.
Oh, my God. And it's just like, there's
lady,
just no...
literally, lady.
Right. Like, you. She was also on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. Like, this is the kind of celebrity we're dealing with.
I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here.
Yeah.
Where were they?
Oh, well, did you know that show? Like, they would take, like, celebrities like Melissa Rivers and put them, like, in some jungle somewhere in, like, a pit full of,
like
anacondas.
I couldn't describe it.
I never saw it.
I assumed they'd be, like, in a supermarket.
Yeah, no, no.
In, like, Nordstrom.
Right, exactly. In a Starbucks.
Right.
But
at the bank.
I love that Isabel, the journalist, asked the director, like, did you go to the castle? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, oh, God.
Oh, my God.
Like, everybody just knows what a grump this lady is. Girl, Home Chef is back.
Yeah, Home Chef is rated number one by users of other meal kits for quality, convenience, value, taste, and recipe ease, my favorite part.
Let me tell you about the convenience. Last night, we were going through our Home Chefs to see what we wanted for dinner, and Steve goes, give me the oven-ready one. I want the oven-ready one.
Let me tell you.
Because you pop it in the oven, it's basically ready to go. You cook however long it takes, like 25 minutes or whatever. Dinner's done.
Yeah, they have the oven-ready trays. They have quick microwave lunches.
Yes.
They have these 30-minute meals with the classic recipes with the fresh ingredients. They have everything.
If you want to be a fancy chef, you can do that too. Like,
yes.
You can chop all the stuff. You can cook it like a real chef person.
Yeah.
Or you can toss your stuff in the oven.
Right. And there's even a dedicated family menu for hassle-free 4 or 6 serving dinners.
We've done that. We've had people over and, like, we make the Home Chef.
So easy.
They also know, fam, it's not a one-size-fits-all thing. Home Chef has over 30 meal options each week with choices from different diets and tastes. I try to go gluten-free. We are actually trying to do, like, high protein.
Yeah, it's really fun to like go through the menu and pick what you want, and then you have something to look forward to instead of it being 6 o'clock and you're like, oh God, what's for dinner?
Which is the worst question of being an adult, as we all know.
There you go.
So fam, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering our listeners 50% off and free shipping for your first box plus free dessert for life. Go to homechef.com/TCO.
That's homechef.com/TCO for 50% off your first box and a free dessert for life.
Homechef.com/TCO. Tell them.
Must be an active subscriber to receive free dessert.
But you want to be, because the free dessert is the best part.
Yeah, because of everything we just said.
It's so good.
Lady C also was writing a book on the life of Lily Safra, who's Edmund, who is the guy who was killed, the billionaire, his wife.
Yes.
And so Edmund's brother reached out to Lady C, and Lady C's like, let me tell you, I got a lot of information from the brother that, like, no one else would get otherwise.
Well, but the loyalties are going sideways left and right in this whole exchange.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I know you're not a Freaks and Geeks person, but there's a song called Lady L that someone, to impress Linda Cardellini, sings late, because her name is Lindsay in the show.
Oh, really?
So, Lady C, now I have Lady L stuck in my
head. Oh, God.
Here's the thing. The Safra brothers hated Lily, apparently.
Yes.
The Safras had always been a very respected family, whereas Lily Safra was a woman of no background. Her ambition was to become the world's leading socialite and set about achieving it.
Because she wasn't, quote, suitable enough for her brother. She wasn't rich enough.
But I also wonder, too, though, like, they're not the rich ones in that family. Their brother is, the one that married her. And in my opinion, this all comes down to who's going to get what when he dies.
100%. Because they're accusing her of using him for clout. She wants to be a socialite. She wants money. We'll learn more about her later, about maybe why that might be a little bit true. But I think everyone is after this guy's billions.
No question. And, like, her ambition, according to Isabel, was to become, like, the world's leading socialite. She kind of nails it.
Right.
She kind of does it.
Edmund has Parkinson's, and so we're told that this kind of puts an end to Lily's social climbing because she had to look after him.
Yes, until he died.
Well, right. So he was on a lot of medication, and apparently, like, his medication or his mixture of medication or whatever made him paranoid that people were coming after him.
Yes.
But then it's like, well, it's not just the medication. It's also the life he was living that was making him paranoid about this.
He's also, like, a very old man. So, like, his whole life, he's, like, surrounded by bodyguards and nurses.
Right.
And this is where we meet Ted Maher.
Yeah, they say his name like 10 different ways. Maher, Maher, Ted. Ted is one of the nurses.
I want to say this, like, taking as much affectation away from it as possible.
Okay.
In his footage from the time, he is so unbelievably handsome.
This guy, Ted?
Yeah, to me. Like, okay. He's just like, if I could look like any person, I would look like him in like the late 90s. Yeah.
I couldn't pick him out of a lineup right now.
Oh my God. Like, this is not me objectifying him sexually. This is me saying that, like, as a little boy, that was what I wanted to look like.
Whoa.
Yeah, just like, to me, this man, not in like modern life, and this guy is a fucking weirdo. So, like, I'm just saying, when I saw him, it like took my breath away.
Isn't that so interesting how just humans are so weird and different, because I can't remember what he looked like right now.
That's so
funny. I was just like type or whatever, like it just didn't sink into me at all.
Well, it's funny.
And meanwhile,
too,
you're like,
he has these like really piercing blue eyes, which, you know, he was complimented throughout his entire life, because in the end he's gonna say 1,000 times, you can look into my eyes and know if I'm a liar.
Crystal
you
blue
can
eyes. Ted,
yeah.
Shut up.
Ted's
a nurse. Not only is he a nurse,
Ted Maher goes for an interview. He was a Green Beret, and he was also a nurse. So he was a good candidate.
He's a Green Beret. Let me tell you, Green Berets are no joke.
Oh, totally.
They're regarded as the most elite soldiers. Like, that's the quote. They go through this, like, super intense training. So with Ted, you're getting a nurse, like, and a guerrilla warfare expert and a bodyguard all rolled into one.
It's like, he's the perfect candidate for exactly what this guy needs.
For this billionaire who's worried that people are coming after him. Like, I'll get into what the Green Berets do, because I was like, I need to, like, learn about them more. They are no fucking joke.
Oh, no. They go through, like, the special forces training. It's crazy.
Also no joke, because Ted explains how he got to Monaco. He was a neonatal nurse in New York City. Another thing that is no fucking joke.
Yeah, Ted is very smart. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, Ted is very smart. That's all. I'm going to leave it there.
Okay.
His wife, Heidi, worked in the hospital with him. They both work in a hospital.
Columbia Presbyterian.
Yeah.
Like, a neonatal nurse, like,
is
serious business.
I know.
At one of these, like, this very prestigious hospital. Like, okay, so you're thinking, like, oh.
Yeah.
So I guess, like, this is how it's done. You, like, when you're a billionaire, you just get a nurse through word of mouth, I guess.
Here's the thing, though. It's not giving it anything away to say we have to question everything everybody tells us. Mm-hmm. Was he a neonatal nurse? You know what I mean?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's just like between the Green Beret and the neonatal nurse. Like, wow, this guy.
Highly qualified.
Stacked resume, right? And that's why I'm thinking, like, how interesting that. Because he says that the parents of twins that Ted was taking care of hooked him up with this new gig because they know the richest guy on earth needs a nurse.
But even that, like, he describes it as a family of kids I was taking. I'm like, were you a nanny?
Right.
Or were you a neonatal nurse for these
and
kids?
And I'm also like, wow, so one of the richest people in the world who's super paranoid just, like, hires someone through word of mouth. I would think that when you're a billionaire, you go, I don't know, like a background check or something or some vetting. But
No.
This person across the world has this contact, and suddenly, like, Ted is on a plane in the lap of luxury.
Yeah. Like, Ted gets flown out to Nice, France, where he's picked up in a limo, driven to the most expensive estate in the world, security with Uzis everywhere. He meets with a psychiatrist as, like, a first interview. He passes that test, and he meets with Lily, the wife.
She said, oh, we've heard a lot of things about you. Very good things. I was ex-Special Forces. So not only would her husband be getting a nurse, but he'd be getting bodyguard/nurse. So that was pretty much it. I mean, Lily was talking to me, asked me a few basic questions, and she said, I'll talk to my husband and you'll come here tomorrow.
She loved that he was like ex-special forces. So it's all working out. Like, you're right. No background check. Nothing really else on this guy. I guess the recommendation of this other family is enough.
I guess it really is who you know.
Yeah. And Lily's like, you start now.
Yeah. You were vetted by the psychiatrist.
Right.
And you're in. Okay.
And you're in. Girl, Quince is back. As you were going through your notes, tell them what you said. You said, I love Quince. I wear it all the time.
I wear it all the time. I have the jeans. I have this crew that's super soft. I have the nylon crossbody bag.
Yes.
I have the little like fleece jogger set.
Tell them about the candle.
And oh my God. So I started ordering my candles from them.
Yeah.
They, you know, when you walk into like a really beautiful space and you're like, you know how important it is for my home to smell good?
100%.
So now I can look super cute and the apartment smells amazing.
And you can sleep easy at night, girl, because Quince works directly with safe, ethical factories and cuts out the middleman, so you're not paying for the brand markup, just the high quality clothing.
And they show you the difference on the website.
I love that.
Here's what these jeans could be out in the real world.
Totally.
Here's how much they are if you order from Quince.
We love Quince. We always have, fam. And you, too, can refresh your wardrobe with Quince.
Go to Quince.com/TCO for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns.
Oh, and they're now available in Canada too, fam.
That's Quince.com/TCO to get free shipping and 365-day returns.
Quince.com/TCO. Get your candles.
So good. Let's learn about Monaco. Monaco is described as a tax-free paradise.
Yeah, more millionaires live in a single square mile than anywhere else on the planet.
And now, depending on who you ask, it's either a gorgeous place to save your millions without taxes, or it's a sunny place for shady people, and there's no in between.
And I have so many questions about this, because we're going to learn that, like, part of the benefit of being a citizen of Monaco is that you don't pay taxes. How do they pay for anything there? How do they get the streets paved? How do they have a fire department? How do they, you know what I mean?
I don't know.
No one's paying any taxes there.
Right. And we're also told that it's one of the safest and securest places in the world.
Yeah.
So because everyone is so rich and everyone has like their own personal security and there are tons of cops or whatever. And I'm like, cops don't make anything safer.
It's interesting because I don't know that at the end of the day, this story does much to dispel that. For me, there's a couple of things that go wrong in what happens here.
Oh, sure.
That like, but other than that, I don't know. Like, I don't want to give anything away, but it seems safe.
Yeah, we're just, you know what? We are just gathering information at this point. Right?
We are. We know too much. You and I know too much right now.
Which, you know, rare, but here we are. Ted is thrilled though. He's like, I'm in Monaco. I have the easiest gig in the world. He's making a ton of money.
Working for Mr. Safra was a dream job. I mean, I'm being paid $600 a day, and I'm getting a $10,000 a month stipend to pay for the hotel, maid service, meals, open bar when you weren't working. They covered everything. Like, wow, life is good.
The money breakdown there seems odd.
I agree.
You know what I mean? Like, $600 obviously is a lot of money for a day's work, but $10,000 a month just to be there and I guess when you're like, it's sort of like when you take like a billionaire like Rihanna and they break down like what a Starbucks costs, like a Starbucks coffee costs for her versus what it costs for
us.
It's
like pennies, right?
It's literally pennies. And so I guess when you're that rich, like, you gotta pay him a regular salary, but then you gotta give him the 10 grand a month just to live. Like, it's just, the money breakdown is weird.
Yeah, I don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense to me as a non-billionaire. I also don't understand why this guy is paying for a hotel and a maid service when there's a 10,000 square foot penthouse.
Right.
On the biggest and most expensive estate on the planet.
I guess, though, if you're the billionaire, you don't want the help living at your house.
But he can live literally, I mean, it's the biggest estate literally on the planet.
Yeah.
Which we're told. So, like, you can't just put another house for the nurses and everything.
It's so weird.
It feels
because
weird to me.
We're also told that Monaco was only one square mile. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like a very small place.
I don't understand this.
Yeah.
It's out of our league.
It's not for us to understand.
You know what? Good. Because then Ted says, and then the shit hit the fan. Oh, did it ever.
Well, we're at a press conference after Safra's death. The Monaco general prosecutor is here, and he tells us the known facts. So once again, the intruders came into the residence. Safra and Vivian, the nurse, took refuge in the safe room. The firefighters came in, and he refused to come out.
And Lily, the wife, escaped and survived. And Ted was stabbed in, like, the fleshy part of the thigh and also survived.
Yes.
So what's interesting here is that first we were told they were in the safe room. Now we're being told they're in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Edmund and his nurse, Vivian. Then when the firefighters come, Edmund refuses to come out of the bathroom. And so Edmund and poor Vivian, the nurse, suffocate from the smoke. And I'm like, this is so tragic, but also wildly confusing because we were just told that Monaco is the safest place in the world and he's surrounded by armed guards. And Ted, the nurse, is a Green Beret. So I'm really struggling to figure out how this happened.
How this happened. You, me, and the people of Monaco.
And then we meet Mr. X. And I said to myself,
Mr. X. Because here's the thing. He wants to be anonymous. And so he's in shadow. Kind of. Like if the
No voice change.
If he were to move his head 1 inch to the right, we'd see his whole face.
He's in disguise as much as I'm in disguise right now.
Literally.
Which is to say.
Loving that wig on you, by the way.
Thank you.
He's the head of security, you know, and he's telling us that
Edmund was afraid of terrorist organizations, mafia. So the security around him was massive security. It was a team of up to 25 security guards. They were from specialist army units.
All from specialized army units like the Mossad?
Yeah.
And like every couple of months, they had new candidates coming in. And this is where we see either the training or the tryout. They're all running around this one room with machine guns.
Yelling.
Doing one-arm push-ups, rolling on the... It just seems like a bunch of boys playing make-believe and having the time of their lives.
G.I. Joe.
Exactly.
Mr. X says, though, with all the protection we have, it should not have happened. And
yes.
Instantly, I'm like, this has to be some kind of an inside job.
It no
doesn't
question.
Make any sense.
Yes.
Otherwise,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So Henry Kissinger, however, is on the news saying, nope, it was organized crime. It was absolutely not an inside job. They have a very long reach. It was the mob of some kind.
Yes. And now we meet Bill Browder. So
He
was Safra's Russian connection, they call him. So Bill is here. He tells us that Edmund was his business partner. Bill is a specialist in the Russian stock market. They set up some business. Safra puts in $25 million. And like in 18 months, it turns into $1 billion.
It's a wild sentence because he says Edmund put up the first $25 million.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow.
I know.
This is money that like...
$25 million is like nothing to Edmund.
And the first $25 million. So it was only going to grow from there. Like the amount of money that these people are all handling is disgusting.
How much of that is Midler's, do you think? How much of that $25 million is Midler's millions?
I kind of can't believe that Midler's even involved in
but
this
you know
guy
what?
Based
like,
on how, you know what I mean? Like
it's the Bernie Madoff of it all. Like Kevin Bacon and Keira Sedgwick lost their entire fortune. You know what
did?
I mean? They lost every penny. I mean, they got it back pretty fast because she was the highest paid actress on TV at the time for The Closer. She was making $1 million an episode. First woman on TV to ever make $1 million an episode. Anyway.
So they were at $1 billion within 18 months, but then.
But in 1998, the Russian government devalued their currency by 75%. We lost $900 million of our clients' money.
Edmund Safra was deeply involved in Russia. His banks had lost billions there in the economic collapse, and in recent months, he had moved to dramatically reduce the amount of business his banks did there.
Safra takes all of his money out of Russia, and that pisses off Putin. Like, that pisses off all of the Russians, and that's why they think this might be a Russian hit.
Right. So now Edmund is scared that the Russian mob is going to kill him. He's not wrong to feel that way. Like, Russian mobsters are known for killing people over business deals.
Yeah.
There's a news report that says they've killed over, quote, 200 businessmen over the last year, whatever year that came out.
Well, and so, like, Bill, the business partner, that's his name?
Yeah. They started the Hermitage Fund. That's what they did.
Oh. I don't know what that is.
Like the Russian dossier?
Oh. The dossier? Oh, shit. Well, we learned, too, that, like, Bill gets a taste of what Edmund's life is like all the time because Edmund hires, like, 20 bodyguards to be around him at all times because he's afraid that he's also going to be killed by the Russians. All of this is just further proof that this is why we think it's Russia at first.
Right. And Bill's like, it's terrifying. And he's like, let me tell you a thing or two about Russian oligarchs. Don't fuck with them. They run everything in Russia. They're super wealthy and they're backed by the Russian government. Like, this is just a very dangerous place to be a billionaire.
And also, like, there's another whole thing where Edmund has his own bank and he finds out that a different bank is sending plane loads of cash to Russia from America, and Edmund rats them out to the FBI.
Well, so yeah, like and this so, guy like, definitely has a target on his back.
Right. So like there's a lot of reasons to think that why this could be Russia.
And he's not totally innocent in this, right?
No.
Like he has this information because he was involved in the money laundering.
Like, so I mean, can you imagine like this billionaire squeaky clean? Like you and I are worrying about going to jail for like accidentally like evading taxes. And this guy's just sending planes full of cash to Russia.
Right. He's got a target on his back. No question. Just the timeline of this. So
Edmund's bank received a letter from the FBI thanking them for their cooperation. This letter is dated August. Then in December, 4 months later, he's killed.
He's given this evidence to the FBI, and he's a marked man.
4 months later, he's killed.
Right.
The timeline is interesting.
Exactly.
That's all I'm saying.
So now we learn about the penthouse where Edmund was killed. So the penthouse is on the very top of his bank, right? This penthouse is over 10,000 square feet. Panic buttons everywhere, bulletproof shutters, CCTV everywhere. It was a fortress that they describe as completely impenetrable.
Well, yeah, because there's like not a single blind spot with the cameras. So they say it's this impenetrable fortress. And I'm like, really?
I know.
They immediately in the same breath say, quote, the penthouse was easily accessible from the hotel next door. It can't be both things.
Now,
either it's a fortress or it's easily accessible.
I mean, this is unbelievable. When we remember, Monaco's only 1 square mile. So they got to pack in a lot of real estate and not a lot of space. And we see how close this hotel actually is to the building where the penthouse is.
You can crawl in one window. In both buildings at
you
one time.
You can have 1 foot on one on the roof, yeah, and 1 foot on the other.
Like, it's that close. Like your legs can be in both windows on both buildings. No question.
Literally,
for real though. It's,
yes,
right. And I'm like, so don't call it a fortress.
Right. No, but truly.
It's just not one.
Girl, drip drop is back. Look, this is all about the hydration. I feel like in the winter, it's easy to forget to stay hydrated.
100%.
Drip drop makes it so easy.
Yeah, so drip drop is doctor-developed, proven fast hydration that helps your body and mind work better. Because when you're dehydrated,
yeah,
it's like, come on.
We love the science here. It uses a precise ratio of electrolytes and glucose for rapid absorption, delivering 3 times the electrolytes and half the sugar of leading sports drinks.
Yeah, so like more focus, better energy, improved,
yes,
mood. Your skin is better, especially in the winter when you're drying out.
Yes, and by the way, over 90% of top college and pro teams use this stuff because it's engineered to rehydrate you faster and more effectively than water alone. Plus, it makes you want to drink more water.
Yeah, and it's also delicious. I love the orange.
Yes.
I love the lemon lime.
Yes.
The watermelon is good, which I didn't think I'd love.
I start my morning with one every single day. And fam, you should too, and you can. Right now, Drip Drop is offering our podcast listeners 20% off your first order.
Go to dripdrop.com and use promo code TCO.
That's dripdrop.com, promo code TCO for 20% off.
Stock up now at dripdrop.com and use promo code TCO.
You know you need this. Start your day with this.
Get the orange. You'll thank me later.
Exactly. Girl, hers is back. Look, it's 2026. If losing weight this year happens to be on your list of things you want to do, hers is going to help you out.
Yeah, and so through hers, you're connected with a medical provider, which is so, so important.
I screamed about it last time.
Right? And they will determine if treatment is right for you. And only after that, if you're prescribed, your treatment plan is personalized to support you in reaching your goals. I cannot stress the medical provider enough.
Yeah, and you can access a range of treatment options like oral medication kits or GLP-1 injectables, which, by the way, I've been taking for 5 years now, and I feel great, but it's the medical provider assistance, place to go for questions,
yeah,
that you get through hers that is absolutely essential.
And they even offer the convenience of 100% online care with licensed providers on the other side. And they learn your story. They can create a personalized plan.
Yes.
They deliver healthy progress that you can maintain.
And it's not just about weight loss, by the way. If growing thicker hair is on your list for 2026, you're doing it. If easing anxiety to navigate menopause symptoms is on your list this year,
yeah,
they've got you covered. Hers is like a one-stop shop.
Convenient lab testing. They,
yeah,
do it all. They
we
do
love
it all.
So fam, feel like your best self again. Visit forhers.com/TCO to get a personalized, affordable plan that gets you.
That's forhers.com/TCO.
Forhers.com/TCO.
Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded drug products are not approved or evaluated for safety, effectiveness, or quality by the FDA. Prescription required. See website for full details, important safety information, and restrictions. Actual price depends on product and plan purchase.
You had to do the, I'm not the rulesy one.
Well,
it's you.
It's written there.
Now we get this whole thing where, like, all along we've been suspecting the Russian mafia, but then the nurse, the pretty guy, gets arrested.
This Green Beret, the news is saying, no, it's not the Russian mob. It's Ted, the Green Beret nurse, and he's been arrested. And now remember, Ted is here with us talking to the documentary.
Yes, and like the reason why they arrest this guy is that
authorities say Ted Mayer concocted a plan he thought would make him a hero in the billionaire's eyes. The nurse set the fire in a wastebasket and planned to rescue Safra.
Ted Mayer set the fire. He alerted a security guard, believing that firemen would put out the flames before they spread, and he stabbed himself to make it look as though he had fought off intruders.
This guy set the fire himself so that he could put it out and save Safra and be a hero.
And, like, get rewarded with the money and be like, oh, no, there was a fire. Oh wow, I put it out. You're welcome. Yep. Why don't you give me a ton
and
of
like,
money?
And, like, look, there was intruders. I got stabbed, but he actually stabbed himself. And, like, as you and I were saying, like, this has all the hallmarks of being an inside job.
Right.
So, like, that kind of makes sense. So the prosecutor holds another press conference. He says Ted has signed a full legal confession. And this is where we also learn that, surprisingly, the CCTV footage all over this billion-dollar penthouse wasn't working that night. So there's no footage of the intruders actually being anywhere in the penthouse.
Or Ted lighting the fire.
Right.
And I'm like, we can sort this shit out right now because this place doesn't have any blind spots, right? And now suddenly, like, either it's been destroyed or we don't have it or whatever.
So it cuts to Ted, who's like, look, next thing I know, I'm being transported to jail. I knew I had to prove my innocence. And now we meet this guy's attorney, Michael Griffith. For just 1 second, I thought he was Michael Cohen. I was like, is Cohen here?
Oh my God.
I was thinking, I'm like, Jillian can't deal. This is not for her today.
It's too much.
We can't be dealing with Cohen today. Remember when Cohen almost single-handedly saved the Republic?
On top of everything else, we're dealing with Cohen today.
I can't. No, not today, girl.
So Ted says, you know, the day before the murder, he explains what happened.
Yes.
His side of the story right now, sitting down for the doc. He says the day before the murder, Ted was kidnapped by two men in a van. He's like, I noticed a van was following me. And then, you know, it happened so fast. I was pushed into this van by these two guys. They are Russian mobsters.
You know, they made it really clear that, you know, I would do what I was told to make sure these steel shutters, which cover the windows in Mr. Safra's apartment, are open on one night in particular. If I do something wrong, my family's going to be killed, murdered, missing, hurt.
They are Russian mobsters.
Yeah.
Showing him photos of his wife and kids, making it very clear that if he doesn't do what they want him to do, his whole family is going to be murdered.
Now, one of those things where it's like, this could have happened.
Right, but this guy's a Green Beret, no?
Yeah.
So I'm like, as he's telling the story, I'm like, he's not talking like a Green Beret, and he's not acting like a Green Beret. And
yeah.
I just want to read something from their website, in case you don't know what the Green Berets are.
Tell me everything.
So, like, on the website, when they're trying to, like, do their pitch of, like, are you interested in becoming a Green Beret?
But you can't just, like, apply. You know what I mean?
This is like Dunkin'
Donuts.
Like, go through some shit to get there. So they're part of the United States Army Special Forces, right? They are America's premier special operations force. They are experts in unconventional warfare, counterterrorism, foreign internal defense, reconnaissance, direct action, hostage rescue, and other strategic missions. And they say, as a Green Beret, you'll be an expert in guerrilla warfare and use unconventional tactics to take on missions abroad. You'll gain very focused skills and access to the most advanced technology, weapons, and gear. I want everyone to just really listen to what they're saying without saying it.
Oh, yeah.
These people are specifically trained to do whatever the fuck it takes.
Yes.
So the that's a real, that's
not
a whole
the
lot
kind of
words.
Guy who gets pulled into a van on a street corner in Nice.
And then, like, does nothing about it. Like, they have direct access to the CIA, to the FBI. The whole point is that they are trained to do what, like, really? Go back and listen to what I said again. Is it a word salad? Yeah.
Yeah.
What are they really saying? Read between the lines.
Yeah.
And Ted's like, before I knew it, I was being threatened. And then Ted's like, sure, Russian mob, I'll do exactly that. And instead of trying to, like, get his way out of it or call some authorities or call the government, he does exactly what they want him to do.
You're right. Like, no one ended up tied to a chair.
This guy's
the worst
Green Beret ever. He's the worst Green Beret of all time because he tells the story of what he does. He and poor Vivian, this nurse, are working. And because they're like, you know, you got to leave the shutters wide open so we can shoot in and assassinate this guy.
Importantly, we should mention, Ted says he wasn't even supposed to be working the night that Edmund was supposed to die. And the kidnappers are like, you will be there.
Right.
You will get there. You will, like, go to the cottage.
You see your wife and kids? Don't you love them? Like, it'd be a real shame if they were murdered brutally.
Exactly. And so he ends up getting called into work that night, according to him. And he's just, like, there when it all goes down.
Right. So he says that he and Vivian, the nurse, were on duty working. And the shutters.
I checked all the windows and the steel shutters are all closed. But then I noticed the nursing station shutters was still open. And I'm like, wow, I don't have to do anything.
This bulletproof shutters are already wide open. He goes, wow, I didn't have to do anything. Oh, but it's sickening knowing that something's going to happen, but you don't have any idea what. And I'm like, as a Green Beret, you're trained to know what.
Yeah.
You're trained to know
totally.
What. And you're trained to stop it. And I'm like, as this Green Beret, shouldn't you have alerted somebody?
Yeah.
Worst Green Beret of all time.
So he describes, he's in the gym. He's hit over the back of the head.
He's
with one
crushing
of
it at the gym, dumbbells. By the way.
Yeah, literally.
Crushing
totally.
It, according to Ted.
He sees the intruders wearing masks. This is where he says, and I quote, my special forces training kicked in.
Finally. Or did it.
Or did it.
Because he's like, he's hit over the back of the head with a lamp, he says. Again, there's no footage of this anywhere.
Right, remember, the CCTV footage wasn't working that night.
So he's taking one of the weights. He's totally crushing.
Yeah,
and he
it's only a 10 kilo.
Attacking? What is that in pounds?
I think, I don't know. Oh, no, 10 kilos is about 20 pounds.
Okay.
Because I only know that because they make kettlebells in kilos. And so I'm familiar with kettlebells.
When you are doing the kettlebells,
yeah.
Are you like me where you are just like, this is going to fly out of my hand at any moment?
No. And I will give it up to Mark Fisher Fitness, the gym in New York City that trained me how to use kettlebells. Because you really learn. It can feel scary, but you know that you're more, people will sometimes wear special gloves.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
You're more likely to let the kettlebell slip out of your hand wearing the gloves than just using your regular hands.
Okay.
Yeah. You can also
I like it. I like the momentum.
Yeah.
I like the feeling of it. But I'm like, let's break down the numbers.
Yeah.
Statistically,
yeah.
How many of us are like in Broad City just like throwing them at the mirror?
Well, I was going to say that happened at Mark Fisher Fitness once. Somebody like
one
let
time.
It go and it broke the entire mirror. I'm just like, yeah, bad. It was a bad scene.
What? I mean, what do you do?
I wasn't
You're
there
just
for
more
it,
of you like never show your face again.
Yeah. You leave the city. You change your name. You get a new passport. You never speak to your family again. You move to Monaco.
Right. So... like, did his special forces training take over? I don't know, because he takes one of the weights and starts attacking the mass intruders. Then he gets stabbed and blacks out. Thanks for nothing, Ted.
He did get stabbed and blacked out pretty fast.
And I'm like, so stabbed in the fleshy part of the thigh equals
being and you blacked out.
Blacked out. Okay.
Yeah,
like,
I guess
thanks for
so.
Nothing. Then he comes to.
Yeah.
We don't know when or how or where or why. Runs to the bedroom.
Yeah.
Poor Vivian, the nurse, says, oh my God, you're bleeding. Ted's like, forget about me. I'm a Green Beret. Someone has broken in. Get Safra to the safe room.
And this doesn't make any sense. Rather than calling for help himself, he hands her the cell phone and says, call for help.
Nobody had ever trained us for like, oh, there's a 911 emergency. So nobody else knew about it.
The only alarm that Ted knew was a fire alarm.
We had a small trash can there. In French, it's called a poubelle. I put it right underneath the smoke alarm. And I lift some tissue into the can. And the alarm went off.
He realizes the fastest way to get the police and the fire department here is to set a fire himself.
Now, okay, Ted has no idea how to report an emergency.
Right.
He is the worst Green Beret of all time because
there are
panic buttons all over the place.
Everywhere.
But he says he didn't know where they were and he didn't think to ask. He says right here with a straight face, he goes, no one ever told us.
Right.
No one ever told the Green Beret nurse where the fucking panic buttons were.
Or like this like specially trained security, like top of notch from, but nobody ever showed you where, like, the most important thing to this guy was his personal security, but nobody showed you where the panic button was.
And as a Green Beret, you don't make it your fucking business.
Right.
And then in his infinite wisdom, he's like, well, I know what I'll do. Since I don't know anything else, I'll just start a fire, put it under the alarm so that the alarm will go off and then the authorities will come save us.
That makes
sense to Ted.
This is giving that time Peter Brady like did the laundry for the first time and put too much soap in and then suds came out and flooded the whole house.
That's exactly it.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I gotta
say. And then they
sang
a song after, right?
100%. When it's time to change, you've got to rearrange who you are and what you're gonna be. Sha-na-na-na-na-na-na-na.
That's not the Partridge Family. That's the Brady Bunch.
That's the Brady Bunch. Because Peter's voice was changing, so his voice was cracking the whole time.
I know that from the movie.
Oh, really?
From the Brady Bunch movie from the
90s. Oh, my God.
Like, his voice was cracking the whole time,
and then he
has a really low voice.
That's what happened.
And Davy Jones did a cameo. I've been trying to find the Davy Jones episode of the Brady Bunch forever, and it's not online anywhere.
When, like, Marsha was, like, the president of the fan club?
Yeah, she, like, invites him to the dance or whatever, and he comes.
Yes,
but he makes a cameo in the 90s movie.
Oh, my God.
The Brady Bunch movie and the Brady Bunch 2 are very funny.
Very, very funny. Put on your Sunday best, kids. It's time to go to Sears.
I don't know, George Glass at our school. That's where Sure Jan comes from.
Oh, really?
That's that gif of
Sure Jan.
That's from the movie. That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, where are the intruders at this point? Because Ted has passed out for a second time.
I know.
The Green Beret nurse has passed out for a second time. The intruders did what? Yeah. They ran off with nothing?
I know.
They just left this guy and his poor nurse to die. And the Green Beret, they didn't like actually hurt the Green Beret. He just passed out for a second time and they just left.
Now, we cut back to
this guy's a billionaire.
Billionaire.
This is the richest, the most expensive estate on the planet. And they're like, oh, we're good.
Well, we cut back to his attorney Michael, and Michael the attorney literally says,
if your client who's facing many years in prison says that's his story, no matter how many times I would grill him on it, then I have to go with his story.
That was the story, so that's what I had to go with.
Okay.
Nobody believes this story.
No. Well, Ted's wife, Heidi, has entered the chat.
Yes.
She told the lawyer that Lily Safra's staff called her the wife, Heidi.
Yes.
And she was told that her husband passed out twice. He was badly injured. He doesn't know how to use a telephone or call 911 or emergency.
Right.
She's very worried. And so Lily Safra, out of the goodness of her heart, flies Heidi and her brother over to Monaco because Ted has passed out again.
Quote, out of the goodness of her heart. Because,
well,
so Heidi and her brother fly to Nice, which I guess is how you get to Monaco, is like via Nice. Lily sends a limo for them, and like rather than taking Heidi and the brother to the hospital to see her husband,
which is where Heidi thinks she's going,
she is rerouted to the police department where she is questioned extensively. Now, this is insane. She goes outside to take a break from her interrogation and is abducted by three men in black jumpsuits off the sidewalk.
Just like Ted, she's thrown into a van.
Did this happen?
The safest place on earth is sounding pretty unsafe.
I know. So then they take her to a hotel room where we hear her telling this from like an interview from the past.
She and her brother.
They take their passports away and hold them hostage in a hotel room for 3 days.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Ted's in the hospital. He comes to again.
Now, his story here is that
they showed me a newspaper and said, you're responsible for this. Sign these documents. And I said, listen, I have not killed anybody and I'm not signing anything. But this police officer said, you're going to sign this. Otherwise, your wife's not going to go back to your children. And they showed me my wife's passport.
If you don't sign this confession, which according to Ted is written entirely in French, your wife is never getting home to your children.
So the cops are the kidnappers?
Right. Right. Because Ted says, like, what would any man do? I signed the confession and that was that.
Even though I had no idea what I was signing. And now what, this is a little confusing, but the statement that he signed is that, quote, confession about being the big hero.
Yes.
And pretending to set the fire and setting the fire so that Edmund would be like, wow, thanks for putting out the fire you set. Here's $1 billion.
Yeah.
That's literally what this thing that Ted signed is.
The thing is, I think this is true. Like, I think this is real.
Well,
you know what I mean? Like, we're gonna, there's so much to question in the end.
A lot. Yeah,
And I'll come back later to why I think this is real. But as crazy as this sounds, I think at least part of this story is true.
Yeah, because nothing Ted is saying makes any sense. But he does say, why would I kill my golden goose?
Yes.
Like, he was making a ton of money living in the lap of luxury. It was the easiest gig ever. So he asks us, why would I kill him?
And we'll get more in that later, but I'll just say it now. Like, his wife is going to acknowledge down the road that Ted was always really worried about money. And the story is floated that Ted set the fire so he could actually save Safra. And Safra would be like, pay him back with cash or whatever. But like, Ted makes a good point here.
Mm-hmm.
He really doesn't have a motive.
It's his one good point.
Yeah.
Now, but Lily, however, Edmund's wife, on the other hand, she got Edmund's entire fortune. And so the cops are like, well, that's
$4 billion.
With a B.
Yeah.
That's a huge motive.
Yes. Yes.
Right? So, but the other thing is like, right, but he's dying anyway.
Right. Yeah.
So then the other, it's like, well,
but we're also going to learn that, like, it was just weeks before he died that he changed his will and gave the money to her and not his brothers. We'll get there. Fam, get cozy because DraftKings Casino is turning up the heat this winter.
Play more than 1,000 slots, everything from classics like Cash Eruption to exclusives like Fire Buffalo.
New players can wager $5 and get 500 spins over 10 days on your choice of Cash Eruption slots.
Download the DraftKings Casino app, sign up with code TCO, and start spinning.
The crown is yours in partnership with DraftKings Casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 800-800-8 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org.
Please play responsibly. 21 plus. Physically present in Connecticut, Michigan, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, West Virginia only. Void in Ontario. Eligibility restrictions apply.
Non-withdrawable casino spins issued as 50 spins per day for 10 days. Valid for featured games only and expire each day after 24 hours.
See terms at casino.draftkings.com/promos. Ends March 15th, 2026 at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time.
Eastern Standard Time.
So Lily, let's talk about Lily. This was her fourth marriage.
Yes.
And it's very hard to find information about her early life.
Isabel, the journalist from the New York Post, which apparently they have journalists.
Investigative journalists?
Investigative journalists. Or journalists of any kind, really. So Lily, like, we learn that Lily is from Brazil. And Isabel, the journalist, becomes so obsessed with the story, she fucking moves to Brazil to, like, investigate Lily's past.
And so we learn that every time Lily gets married, the person is richer than the guy before.
Yes.
And so everyone that Isabel from the New York Post comes in contact with about Lily, they are terrified of Lily.
Because
they're like, she's dangerous. She can do a lot of stuff. Like, no one really wants to speak out against her in any way.
And, like, even Isabel in Brazil researching her feels like she's being followed and that people are watching her apartment. Like, well, Lily is a scary lady.
Totally. And what's interesting is that Lily's second husband,
a couple years after they married, he died under rather strange circumstances. When I got the autopsy report, I found out he committed suicide by shooting himself twice.
By shooting himself in the chest twice.
And the thing about this guy was that he was one of the richest men in Brazil. He owned this, like, chain of 100 department stores. And when he died after shooting himself twice. She inherited all of his money, and he also changed his will to give her all of the money just weeks before he died.
And that second husband's will, all the money was supposed to go to his mother and sister, who were the original shareholders in this zillion-dollar company, which makes sense.
Yes.
Like, that's like, oh, that is, like, keep it in the family, the original shareholders. So then a couple weeks before his death, it just all goes to Lily.
And, like, same thing with her, what's his name, Edmund, the billionaire? Yeah. Same thing. All of his billions was going to go to his two brothers, which were also his business partners, but a couple weeks before he died, he changed his will and gave it all to her. It makes her look like a good suspect.
It does, because it's not just that the brothers were, like, downgraded. They're not in the will at all.
They got cut out of the will.
If it happens once, it's suspicious. Twice?
Yes.
Super suspicious.
And also, we should say, the reason given for why her second husband, the department store owner, took his own life was because he found out that she was having an affair with Edmund.
Right. It's all very convoluted.
Yes.
$4.8 billion. That's a hell of a motive.
When you're dealing with this kind of money, tax-free. I don't know how they pay for roads or police or schools, but they do it somehow.
I don't know.
Can you just enjoy the money? Can you just enjoy it?
I'm starting to learn that the answer for these people is
just no.
Yeah. Because the thing is that $4.8 billion isn't even the main reason people suspect Lily.
Yes.
They suspect her because the night, or in addition to...
On the night that Edmund died, the bodyguards supposedly had the night off.
Not one member of Safra's personal army was with him the night of the fire.
No one was with him except for the worst Green Beret on the planet.
It doesn't make any sense.
And the bulletproof shutters were just open.
Like, then I'm thinking, was Lily trying to cut corners? Was she trying to save some cash? Like, what was, why?
Right.
Unless, and given the night off by Lily, we should say. Mm-hmm. So, like, I don't know. She looks like a good suspect to me.
And also, Mr. X is like, yeah. And then she fucking fired, like, she fired his head of security weeks before this, too, and hired some Samuel Cohen guy.
Because what was going on was, like, Lily was cutting down on the security personnel. Mr. X was the head of security. And so Edmund, the husband, secretly said to him, do what you have to do. Just don't tell her about it. But of course, she finds out. So she fires Mr. X and hires her own guy, who's a fucking moron, by the way.
A moron.
But also, it's just like, Edmund, you know, we're all in partnerships where we don't always agree on how to spend the money. But when you're the breadwinner and it's your billions of dollars and your life on the line, I think it's okay to say to your wife, I'm going to overrule you here and keep my security detail.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
I have to wonder if his illness and all the medications were playing a role in this, that maybe he wasn't fully... aware of what was going on.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He was older. He was in very poor health. And we hear that these medicines were really, like, messing with him mentally. So who knows?
Yeah, well, but then it also cuts back to Lady C, my favorite grump.
Lady C.
And she says Lily's hand is evident throughout. Now, remember, Lady C is privy to, like, privileged information.
She's writing the book on this.
She's writing the book because she's getting all the information from the brothers. Now, of course, the brothers are going to try to make it look like Lily's responsible because, like, they got fucked by Lily.
Right.
But she says also that Monica was quite determined to blame the nurse. That is going to turn out to be true.
Yeah. So meanwhile, Ted is on trial for the murder. His legal team is in peril. They totally disagree.
Because his Monaco lawyers don't believe him. They're like, his American lawyer is like,
they wanted Ted to stick to the confession.
The Monaco attorneys said, you can't go back on this now because it would show that you're lying. I'm like, what do you mean I'm lying?
I said, hey, wait a minute, Ted. Your wife was abducted to force you to make this confession. Let's go that route.
Renege on that confession that you signed because you're saying you didn't do it. His Monaco lawyers to us are like, bitch, we know he did it.
Yeah, you got to stick to the confession.
You got to stick to the confession. No one's going to believe you otherwise. They don't believe that there were ever any intruders. So the lawyers are fighting.
And so Ted ends up going with the Monaco lawyers. He's sticking with this confession that today he says he never made, but he didn't know what he was signing, but for the sake of the trial.
And it's a wise decision, I think, because if he were to take back the confession and get convicted of this, he's looking at life in prison versus a much reduced sentence if he goes into court having admitted what he did.
Right, that it was a mistake, it was an accident, he didn't mean to.
Yes.
And we'll learn other things about this, that if that were true, there are many other people at fault here.
Yeah.
So the trial is a circus, right? He's charged with arson, resulting in two deaths.
Yes.
And the prosecution's like, look, Ted was broke, he needed money, he came up with this plan for the reward money that Ted was sure he'd get, but we don't have any evidence, we don't know anything about any conversations, or Edmund was like, if you ever save me from a fire, you get $2
billion. I know. And it's also like, how can you be broke when you're making $10,000 a month?
Well, Sonia is the head nurse. She's the key witness for the prosecution. And she's like, Ted was a fucking complaining drip from day one.
Now, look, I'm going to defend Ted a little bit here because Sonia's saying he was always mad that I wasn't giving him enough shifts. Now, look, we were told in no uncertain terms, Ted was a family man. He loved his kids. Mm-hmm. He loved being around his kids. If you are now overseas before your family gets there and your sole purpose is just to work and send money home and you're not getting enough shifts, I understand that.
Right.
You know?
But Ted, from his own mouth, said, this was a golden goose. I was making a ton of money in the lap of luxury. Why would I kill this guy?
Yeah. But, like, Sonia's also going to be described by a bunch of people as, like, not a reliable narrator because, like, she was convinced that Ted wanted her job.
There's not a single reliable narrator here.
100.
Not even the filmmaker.
That's kind of why I love it. I kind of believe Lady C.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Yeah,
yes, she could be.
Grumpy as she. You know,
she doesn't give a fuck.
I would still do tea with her even if she yelled at me the whole time.
She would yell at you.
Yeah, she would. Yeah. She would hate having to do it.
She
whatever
would hate,
charity
like,
thinks she
that
donated.
Your, that your spoon was making in the
God.
Teacup, she would be like, can you keep it down?
Who's this gay boy with that loud voice?
She's like, I only have an hour. Yeah. Minimal. So Sonia's version, Sonia the head nurse, her version of the night of the murders is that she had the day shift and then she was passing the torch to Ted and Vivian.
Now, remember, Ted says he wasn't even scheduled that night, but somehow mysteriously got called in. Sonia's like, he was absolutely on the schedule.
Right. But Ted was a nervous wreck.
I noticed that Ted was kind of frantic and couldn't wait for us to get out of the penthouse. There was something not quite right.
He couldn't wait for Sonia to get the hell out of there. And she goes, there was something not quite right. Now, this is where we learn that Sonia and Ted, they say it, everyone around them, they didn't like each other.
They didn't like each other.
And that they are both admitting it. They just didn't. And there was tension. And Sonia is convinced that Ted was gunning for her job. And he was like trying to make her look bad in front of Edmund. And then Ted, of course, always the victim. Like, I don't know. I didn't do anything.
And we get this story that like Lily, the wife, goes in to say goodnight to her husband. And Ted is heard saying to him, you're going to sleep well tonight, Mr. Safra. And I was like, but who'd you get that story from? Lily, the only other suspect in this murder other than the Russian mob? Mafia?
I don't believe a single thing anybody says.
No.
And the way the story is being told in the documentary is hard for me. I don't know if it's my own like ADHD weirdness, but like the storytelling is killing me in this.
Oh, that's, I liked it.
I'm finding it like nothing makes sense. I don't trust anybody.
Yeah, I get that.
So I'm feeling scattered in a way that I don't think was the intention.
Uh-huh.
to make me feel that way.
No, I get it. I see that.
So anyway, the security cameras, right? Every inch of that place was in view of the cameras, but there's no footage and or the footage was destroyed and or it's been erased.
Because Sonia describes that like one night a week before walking into the nurse's station, seeing Ted like on a chair fiddling with something in the ceiling that turned out, according to Sonia, to be the security footage wires. And then we learned that Ted used to work in the CCTV section of a casino. So like he would know how to break the camera so they wouldn't work.
So much free time as a Green Beret, like so many side hustles.
Truly.
Working, doing security in Vegas too.
I know. Wow.
And neonatal nurse. And wow, just amazing. So the defense is like, okay, fine. But
Ted never thought any of this could happen. He thought as soon as that smoke detector went off that the police would get here in 10 or 15 minutes, and they did. And guess what? It took him another 2.5 hours.
We would prove the police created the time frame for Mr. Safra and Vivian Durant to be dead.
This is the fault of the cops and the fire department. And let me tell you,
it is.
It 100%. They are absolutely culpable in this.
Yeah. So this is wild. This is, in my opinion, like the thing that nobody planned for. So like,
this made me very anxious.
Yeah, me too. And we're going to get into the timeline of this in just a minute. But like, with all of the security preparations around him at all times, this was the part of the plan that nobody planned for.
Right. We will break this down, but they tell us it took the first responders 3 hours to get into a penthouse that is on fire.
Yes.
That is some where I was like, oh, new fear unlocked. Like, this is absolutely horrifying.
It really, a lot of it has to do with, well, so here we go. So the timeline starts 4:49 a.m., the fire alarm sounds because Ted has like lit the trash can on fire. As the genius Green Beret move that I think is like you learn on day one, you set a trash can on fire, put it under the smoke alarm if you need the cops.
They're elite. The word is
elite. They're elite. Exactly. So that happens at 4:49 a.m. 4:53 a.m., the concierge in the lobby sees Ted holding his abdomen with both hands. Remember, Ted has gone into the elevator and gone down to the lobby, passed out. The concierge sees him, thinks that Ted has been shot.
Writes it in his notebook.
Yes.
Man injured by gunshot. We're taking notes.
But like nobody calls the cops at this point.
Does anyone know how to call for an emergency in Monaco?
I know.
We're taking notes in our notebook.
Man I know.
Injured by gunshot.
Now, we also learn here.
There were 23 levels of underground parking. The police had to clear the entire building before letting the firemen inside.
Because the police have been told there's an intruder, they have to clear all 23 levels of the parking garage before they're allowed to go into the penthouse.
Looking for the shooter.
This makes no
Zero.
Sense.
I'm like, they don't have to. They're choosing to do that. That this is totally backwards.
The place is on fire.
On
the
fire.
Guy is in the panic room. Like, everyone is about to die.
So this takes 3 hours. Now, it is kind of unclear if the cops knew about the fire and still wasted all this time. Because that is hard. How can
but
you possibly?
They did know because Sonia is saying Vivian, the nurse who's in the panic room with Safra, is calling Sonia. Sonia's on the scene. She's saying, Sonia, we're dying. Sonia's like, they're here. They won't go in until they clear the fucking parking garage. This is one of the richest men in the world. He's got a security team of 800 people.
Personal army.
And nobody ever thought to think if something goes wrong, are they going to have to clear the parking garage before they go into the building?
Like,
can you imagine that?
That is something that is going to unexpectedly stick with me for the rest of my life, knowing that Vivian, who's a nurse just trying to do a totally fucking innocent here, not
yes.
in bed with Russian oligarchs, like just trying to be a good person.
Yes, I know.
And
begging
she,
for her life.
And she knows the fire's getting... Hours and hours are going by.
Now, what is crazy is like, it's not like they're trapped in that panic room, but the protocol is they think that there are intruders still in the building and they can't come out until his personal security says it's okay. But I just want to remind people, like, they are kind of in there by choice. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, I'm not blaming the victims in any way.
We'll
but...
get into the details of that in a minute.
Yeah.
So by 5:20 a.m., Sam, the new head of security, arrives. So the alarm went off at 4:49 a.m., so 30 minutes later.
Yeah. And like, to this guy's credit, he's screaming at everybody, like, the penthouse is on fire. Go in and save them. And when they won't...
They tackled him, handcuffed him, and said, you can't go upstairs.
I'm sitting on the floor, handcuffed.
and they fucking arrest him.
He makes it to the fifth floor and they tackle him.
They put him in handcuffs. This makes no sense.
6:15 a.m. It's been an hour and a half. It's, quote, the first attempt to put out the fire. It is chaos and horror until 7:45 in the morning when the bodies are, quote, finally discovered.
Yeah.
Because they let them fucking burn.
They let them burn.
That is, I mean, they should all be fired. They should, we have to start over.
For like the most elite 1 square mile country in the world full of the world's billionaires, how is there this level of incompetence? I really don't understand it.
And Isabel from the New York Times is like, well, did they do this on purpose? And it's so bad. Like,
yeah.
It's so bad that if they did it on purpose, you'd almost think that they'd be more subtle.
Yeah.
Like, it was so bad that it almost can't be on purpose, almost.
Right.
It's some weird...
I'm sure there's stuff that is left out of this, but 3 hours to know that that man and that woman are in that panic room waiting for them, it makes no sense.
And which will lead you to be a little bit, like, conspiracy, thinking, well, wait a second.
Right.
How? Why right. don't they just... I thought billionaires, like, there are no rules for them. Just fucking run upstairs and save them.
And what I want to say here is that even if Ted is guilty of this, and he did light that fire... I mean, it's his fault because he lit the fire, but like there's plenty of time to save them.
100%.
You know?
And that's why the defense kind of has a leg to stand on here, because they're saying so many other things went wrong. No security on
yes.
board that night. They were all sent home. No CCTV footage, a useless Green Beret, useless cops, useless fire department.
Yes.
And now we get Lily's side of the story on the stand.
Yeah, and like the whole thing here, because we cut back to Lady C and she's saying, remember, she's getting inside information from Joseph, who is Edmund's brother. And like, they fully believe that Lily had their brother killed. And like, what we learn here is that like, it was Lily who kept him in the panic room.
Well, her side of the story is she's in her bedroom. They
yeah.
have separate bedrooms.
It was my husband. And he said, Sherry, there are aggressors in the house. They have injured Ted Mayer. Close yourself in and call the police. Suddenly, all the blinds opened up by themselves. But only to the level of the railing. I didn't know how I got out. That I did.
She is awakened by a phone call, and it's Edmund saying, oh my God, the intruders are here. Ted is hurt. Hide and call the police. And then suddenly, according to Lily, all of the bulletproof blinds open by themselves.
Yeah.
They have a mind of their own. And so Lily is able to escape. She doesn't get Edmund. She doesn't look for anyone. She just, oh my God, this act of God. I can't believe it. They have a mind of their own.
Yes.
Up they go. And she bails.
And she bails. But I guess she's on the... I don't really understand the timeline here. But like...
Because none of this happened.
But we learned that there's a code between Edmund and Lily. Because Edmund is still in the safe room, I guess talking on the phone to her or whatever. And she's telling him to come out. But we learn that the code, when she says come out, it means don't come out.
So Lady C explains it. I watched it 3 times because I wanted to be clear. Dear
yeah.
listener, it's going to sound like we're saying it wrong.
Exactly.
We are not.
Yeah, yeah.
The code was that if Lily told Edmund to come out of the room, that meant to not come out of the room.
Because the theory is she would tell him to come out and maybe find her at gunpoint of somebody else.
Who would agree to that?
I know.
This makes no sense at all. Like, there's too much room for error. Guess what? We're living it.
I know.
You
yeah.
have to have a different, then you work the word pineapple into a sentence or something.
But
it doesn't make any sense.
I also think, too, that, like, when you have 25 fucking bodyguards and you're the 200 richest person on earth, you never think it's going to come to this.
Well, this is what you get if you hire everybody through word of mouth and you don't vet everyone.
Literally, have like, we talked about ZipRecruiter?
Like,
hire yourself a Green Beret within a day.
The worst Green Beret nurse of all time.
I
and
know.
It's like, well, maybe if you don't vet anyone, then you have like bulletproof shades that just work.
I know.
For no reason and pull themselves up so your wife can escape unscathed.
It feels like what also went wrong here was they were overprepared. You know what I mean?
In what way?
Like, there were too many cooks in the kitchen. There were too many people with competing ideas of what to do. Too many different people trying to be the number one to Mr. Sat. Like, if he had a small security detail, this never would have happened.
It just is,
you know,
unbelievable,
I mean?
To me that Ted not knowing... Like, even if Ted knew where the emergency alert thing was, it wouldn't have mattered because these assholes took 3 hours to get to the top of a burning building.
Well, and that, if what they're saying is true, that Ted did light this fire but had no intention of killing him, nobody ever would have known that the fucking Monaco protocol is clear all 22 levels of the parking garage.
Right.
Like, that is crazy.
And waste 3 hours. And then it makes people think, well, why would you do that? Like, How inside of an inside job is this?
Yes, yes.
So Ted is convicted.
An American man has been sentenced to 10 years in prison in what's being called Monaco's trial of the century.
They condemned me for 10 years for something that I didn't do.
He gets 10 years. Lily, on the other hand, gets more than $3 billion with a B dollars.
Yeah.
So now we meet Luigi, the cellmate.
Oh, my God.
Luigi only speaks Italian. He wants us to know that his motto is that he used to rob the rich and give to the poor guy. Not poor people in general. One poor guy, him.
This poor guy.
Luigi.
Luigi, the poor guy.
Luigi wants to have some fun today.
But he's Ted's cellmate, right? And, you know, we also learn about like how cushy the prison in Monaco is.
It's described as a 5-star luxury hotel.
That's
amazing.
Wild.
Views, food spectacular.
Unbelievable. Put me in that prison any day.
But it wasn't going to last forever.
Yeah.
So Ted is going to stay there for 3 months. And then he tells us that he's going to get transferred. This is all Ted's words. I'm just going to repeat what he said. That he's going to get transferred to a French prison, which is 85% Muslim. And this is when, quote, George W. Bush is playing cowboy in the Middle East. So this was a death sentence to Ted.
Yeah. And so he's decided he's got to break out of prison before he gets sent to that prison in France. So he hatches a plan to escape and enlist Luigi.
Right, because Luigi's the only bad enough guy who wouldn't rat him out.
Right, and they call their mission Monaco, fuck you. Like, these are such a bunch of dumb idiots.
Yeah. So this is where, though, Ted and Luigi have totally different stories.
100%.
So both of them are the cool hero in their version.
Yes.
But Luigi says Ted's obsession with being the main character is baffling. I want you to take that with you throughout the rest of this episode.
I just want to say that made me believe Luigi. You know what 100%. I mean? Like, I totally believe Luigi in this.
I do too.
Yeah.
For sure. So they start arguing, like, via interview about who did what, who smuggled in the blades, who distracted
well,
who.
Well, it's kind of important to say that Ted's story is that
in my cell, there was a window, and it had a beautiful view of the Mediterranean. But it was through 8 levels of bars. So I got my sister to send me 4 hacksaw blades and a small book, which was hand carried in. My father, Peter Ball, who I knew had a pacemaker, and he wouldn't be going through a metal detector.
He got his sister to send him 4 hacksaw blades in a small book, which was hand carried in by Father Peter Ball, his personal priest. Mm-hmm. So the priest smuggles in the saw blades. Remember that, because Father Ball is going to do something else in a minute that, if this part is true, it's surprising.
Yeah. Here's what they agree on, though, these two. That the bars were whittled down. They covered the holes with glue and cigarette ash to make it look like there weren't holes.
Very Green Beret,
Very
if you
green
ask
beret.
Me.
It took 5.5 weeks, but they did it. And the guards are too busy watching soccer, so they made their escape.
My favorite part here is that when it's time for them to bust out the windows, Luigi wants to go first because, according to Luigi, Ted's ass is too big.
Right.
And he knew he was going to get stuck. And you know what? Luigi was right.
He shoved Ted out of the way. He's like, bye.
Yeah, bye. Ted got stuck because of his big butt.
And Luigi runs back home to Italy.
So, like, Ted is out.
This is a very interesting part of the story.
It's not, or it is?
It is. It's just like, if you've been paying attention, don't worry. I'll tell you the details.
Yeah.
But he escapes.
Yes.
And we're told that there's no, like, jumpsuit, you know, like we have like the orange or the white jumpsuits or whatever.
They're wearing TCO merch.
So he can like slip into the crowd very easily after he escapes, and it's raining. He's walking 25 miles uphill both ways, I bet, Ted.
But as a Green Beret, that's nothing.
No, but he's asking people, he's like talking to people in French. He's like, I'm asking for help. I'm lying to them, telling them my car broke down. I'm like, that's super interesting because you couldn't speak French earlier when you signed that fucking confession that you were forced to sign.
Right.
Now he's able to come up with stories and lies.
You love this documentary.
Like,
you love it.
Ted.
I know.
Like, that's interesting to me.
So he gets to a hotel, he uses a phone to call his sister, gets her credit card number, then calls his priest, the guy that sent him the fucking hacksaw blades, asks this guy for money, then he calls his wife. Now, this is my favorite. This is where I've got questions about Heidi. Because Heidi is, all throughout the documentary up to now, very much, I love my husband, I want him home, he's an innocent man.
She's not here, by the way.
She's not here. Heidi is a very complicated character, and she's been fucking through it in this thing.
Yes.
I'm team Heidi 100%. But he calls his wife.
And he said, it's me, Ted. And he just kept talking. I couldn't even speak. He said, I'm out. And I said, you're what? He said, I'm out.
Before I could go any further, oh my God, you're a fugitive. I'm not speaking to you. I'm going to get in trouble too. Again, I have nothing to say to you. And she hung up the phone.
you're like a fucking fugitive. I can't talk to you. And she hangs up on him.
She rats him out.
Now, if I thought Steve was wrongfully convicted and he broke out of prison and he called me, I would be, I know I always say I would turn anybody in if I thought they did it. If I thought they didn't do it, I would 100% help. The only thing I'm thinking about the wife turning him in is that, like, if she does get in trouble, then she goes to prison and now the kids are all fucked.
Well, this is where I think she takes an opportunity because yes. Ted calls his wife.
And that's what I'm saying. To be serious, like, I have a lot of questions about their marriage that I didn't have up to this
There's
point.
There's a lot more there yeah. because she calls his lawyer who calls the prison, right? Ted is caught by police thanks to his wife.
Yeah.
She is on the news saying, these are quotes, and this is when I'm yeah. like, there's a lot more here. She says, I was scared to death to have him at home. I know the kids need their dad, but I don't think it's healthy to have Ted in their life. I don't need him and I don't want him.
Yeah.
There's a lot that led us here that we're yeah. not learning about.
When she said I was scared to have him here, I was like, wait a second. Like 15 minutes ago in this documentary, she's sobbing. My husband is innocent.
Yeah.
So
something happened.
Something happened. I think that this part of the documentary tells me the most about Ted that I think we learn at any point.
I have to wonder what happened before he left for Monaco.
No,
what was
no
their
question.
Relationship yes. like? What made it so easy for her to say, nope.
Go. Yeah.
You know, instead of like this perfect or not just like partner that you had that you yes. loved and cared about and believed and something tragic happened. It's interesting her switch. So yeah. it makes me think there's a lot of history.
And I think too, the him breaking out of jail and her knowing he's going to get caught and how much worse this is going to make it for everybody also adds to her being like, what the hell?
Right. Now, Ted and his lawyer tell us.
Remember, I mentioned previously that the wife was abducted by Lily Safra's chauffeur. We brought a lawsuit against Lily Safra on behalf of Heidi for the abduction. Before the court appearance in New York, Heidi called me and said, I want to drop everything.
2 days before the trial, she drops all of the charges. And there's this story that, like, Ted's lawyer doesn't want to be on camera saying it, but he's like, oh, Lily totally paid off Heidi with this weird fake real estate deal.
Now, my question here is like, if this is true, isn't this just called settling a case? This lady is trying to sue you and you're just going to give her money. That's called settling a case. Why is everybody afraid to talk about this?
I don't know.
And Ted says he learned later because his wife quickly divorces him and he finds out later that she bought a $300,000 home in cash like a month later.
So the question is like, did Lily buy this house?
Yeah.
And so it's not a bribe. It's just like, oh, for all of the horrible things that you just went through, like, out of the goodness of my heart, here's a house.
Right. Yeah. I mean, in any event, like, it all went away.
It all went away.
Yeah.
So Ted is now in prison. He's on trial for the escape. He only gets 9 additional months on top of his original
They're
sentence.
Real lenient over there.
I mean.
You know what I mean?
Well, we'll learn why later.
Yeah.
So a few years go by and a judge involved in the original case with Edmund Sanfa and the fire,
yeah.
comes out and says, oh.
The whole trial was prearranged before he even set foot in the courtroom.
The judge had decided to find him guilty from the very outset.
The judge is saying, we went into the trial knowing that he was going to be convicted. But like, so then what is this judge saying happened? Is he saying that like this whole thing was made up? None of it, Ted really had no part in any of this?
And what does it mean that he's saying this? It's just like, okay, so nothing changes?
Right.
No one's held accountable? Because we're told that this happens all the time in Monaco. That's yeah. what they say, that Monaco wants to stay a safe haven for billionaires. They want to protect Putin and the Russians. So when a billionaire is murdered, they kind of make it go away somehow so that billionaires feel safe being there. Like, who gives a fuck about these billionaires?
I know.
I'm just so like tired of this. Like, what is that? Like, where is this going?
Well, and so like in what was originally going to be the end of this documentary, we're sitting with Ted. He denies having anything to do with it. He said he did his 10 years. He did his time, but he didn't do this.
And so like, then we get just, they drop this in that like, was Lily working with the Russians to kill her husband? Because she was going to sell the most expensive estate on the face of the earth
yes.
to this powerful Russian guy. He puts $50 million down on the contract.
Yes.
Then the deal suddenly falls apart, which deals fall apart all the time, whatever. But Lily's like, too bad, I'm keeping the down payment anyway, which was $50 million. $1 million. So the question is, like, this guy just walked away from this insane deal. Was that a payoff? Was that a way to transfer money somehow that didn't look like a payoff?
So,
is
like,
the question.
We're kind of left at what would be the end being like, we don't really know what happened.
And it says the end, and I'm like, there's 15 minutes left.
Right.
So then we're back, like, here we go again. And this is why I'm like, I fucking hate this thing. So,
but see, this is why I kind of love it. Because this is where all of a sudden the director says, this is where the story was supposed to end. But shortly after this interview, something interesting happened. Ted went missing for months. Now, remember, Ted has long served his time. He's back. He's changed his name legally to John Green. He's been living back in the United States.
But he is calling the director.
Right.
So, like, Ted is on the run again. He's the victim again. He's the scapegoat again. It's all a setup again.
But, like, it's kind of crazy that he's been living over here under a different name, keeping his nose clean, and all of a sudden...
Hey, I'm trying to figure out some charges that were brought against somebody.
Trying to see what the charges are?
John Green...
You have burglary, larceny, forgery, fraud.
Oh, boy.
He's being charged with burglary, larceny, forgery, and fraud, and he's accused of forging his estranged wife's check. Now, we get this insane CCTV footage of him at a bank where some cop, like, shows up and catches him, and we hear Ted saying, and you'll never believe what happened, he shot me with a taser, and then it cuts to the parking lot footage of Ted taking off in his car, basically running into a tree, but he gets away, and he's on the run.
And he's on the phone with the director, ranting and raving like a lunatic.
He's on the run for so long. He's calling the director weekly, being like,
the cops can't find this guy?
Right? Like, you're the only one I can trust. You're the only person I can talk to.
So he's finally arrested. And the cops say that, oh, on top of all of that, he tried to hire a fellow inmate to kill his wife. It's not Heidi.
Right.
This is a woman named Kim Lark. Kim is okay.
Yeah.
The story's insane. He dognapped her three dogs. All the dogs are fine. But, like, if you look up this story, Kim's like, he was a terrifying nightmare. Like, he's a violent, erratic person.
Yes. And you can tell that throughout this thing.
Yeah.
He's unhinged.
He's, like, not okay. So the director... only now, thanks to maybe verify all of Ted's insane fucking stories that never added up from the beginning.
I know.
Like, none of them are true.
Well, so the director's like, I wanted to believe his story, but now he's questioning the most basic details. So he looks into whether or not this guy was a Green Beret, and he gets a guy who works for an organization called Guardians of the Green Berets, and there's so much stolen valor out there that these organizations exist that, like, this is how you can verify if somebody actually was a Green Beret or not.
There is no way that he completed the Special Forces medical course, nor was a Green Beret. And those stories being a Green Beret are untrue.
Ted absolutely was not.
I went to high school with someone who was pretending he was a Green Beret.
That is really fucking crazy.
Yeah, he was,
like,
a senior.
I have so much family that was in the military. It boils my blood.
Yeah, but, like, of course he wasn't. And I'm sitting here thinking, am I crazy? Like, is it not your responsibility as a documentarian to confirm shit that sounds outlandish?
I mean, maybe it is, but I feel like it never happens.
It never happens. And I get that. But, like, if this last 15 minutes didn't happen, he just would have, like, let Ted present himself in this way with no fact-checking whatsoever.
Well, let's get to the end, because I have questions for you.
Okay.
So...
also, his new name is John Green. He's obsessed with Green Berets. Green?
Oh, you're right.
That has to be connected, right?
But this is where we start, like, Isabel's like, this is where you start to, like, question everything. Like, the mysterious people kidnapping him, were there intruders? We learned that Ted, the confession that Ted signed was not in French. When he signed it, it was translated into English. He knew what he was signing. Now, I'm going to give Ted a little bit of room here, though, because this is what I was saying when we were talking about the wife being kidnapped and the taking of her passport. We have this judge that came out and said, we went into this thing, we were going to convict him one way. Like, we knew what was going to happen. So, like, Ted signing that confession, he was coerced into signing that confession.
And look, this happens all the time, and I'm not going to sit here and be like, you shouldn't sign that. I don't know what anyone would do if the same guys who kidnapped you are also the cops and they have pictures of your family saying, if you don't sign this, I'm going to kill them.
Yeah.
What would you do for your family?
Of course.
I understand that. But, like, then just say that and say it wasn't English. Why are you lying about not speaking French and then speaking French? Like,
exactly.
The lies are endless and they're compulsive.
Yes, I absolutely agree.
So John Green, Ted,
yes.
is found guilty of hiring a hitman to kill his wife, Kim.
It's so crazy. He gets 10 years, you know, and like in the end, like the director is saying, like, because the story that Ted is telling, there were intruders, he set the fire to save Edmund, and that ended up killing him.
Right.
Like, are you telling the truth about that?
Because now, just to be clear, it's been 3 years since the interview from the first hour and a half of this thing.
Yeah.
So the filmmaker interviews him in prison now.
Yes.
And 3 years have gone by. So the director is like, look.
Yeah.
It's been 3 years. You're in for this insane thing. You were on the run. Like, you're kind of unhinged.
Right.
Can you just level with me?
Right, because back in Monaco, he was blamed for, like, lying about the intruders, starting the fire on purpose to win Edmund's trust and get some money, right? And he's like, were you lying to me then? And he's like, no, I was absolutely not lying to you then. I believe the Russian, if this was the Russians, probably helped by Lily. Mm-hmm. Are you lying to me now?
I'm going to ask you again, are you a liar?
No, absolutely not.
Have you been truthful to me?
Yes, everybody in this room. You know, you can look in my eyes and see if I'm telling the truth. There's no reason to lie. It's done.
He just will not take accountability for anything.
He's just rambling on and on. It's very tedious. And it's like, what did you think was going to happen sitting here with this guy? So we get like a ton of on-screen text. So Bill, the finance guy, has been the target of multiple Russian assassination attempts, and he still travels with bodyguards.
Unbelievable.
Which sort of leans to like, you know, Edmund did have a target on his back.
Yes. I mean, how baller to travel with bodyguards?
Like,
you know,
25 of them?
That's
crazy. Would stress me out.
Yeah.
Isabel Vincent, the reporter from the New York Post, released her book and was sued by the Safra family. The
yes.
book was banned in Lily Safra's home country of Brazil. So Lily has a lot of pull.
Wild.
Lady C was sued by Lily.
Yes.
Her book was pulled. It was later released, but with many redactions. Lily Safra doesn't want information out there, and
yes.
she's doing anything she can, and she has the money to do it.
Yes.
Michael, the American lawyer for Ted,
yeah.
he did a mock trial of the Monaco case, and the day of the event, it was shut down by who?
By Lily's lawyers, yeah.
Heidi, his wife, who was like, I don't need him anymore. My sons are better off.
Yep.
Didn't respond to requests for comment. Good for her.
Listen, we learned that Lily Safra died in 2022. At the time of her death, she was worth $1.2 billion. That means she spent almost $2 billion in like the last 15 years of her life.
I was going to say, $1.3 billion, it's an ungodly amount of money.
Yes, but she started with four.
She lost about half of it. It's bad business.
Yes.
Or was she paying everybody off to keep their mouth shut? I don't know.
Or was she just like shopping at Chanel?
Like, I don't know. So Ted, aka John Green, was sentenced to 9 years in prison. He's expected to get out in 2031. There are a lot of unreliable narrators here.
Yeah.
I feel like if the Russian mob were involved, they'd do a much better job.
I'm the Alcom's razor girly. I think that he lit the fire. I think that he thought that he would, like, it would be a quick in and out. Like, he disconnected the CCTV footage so nobody would see him light the fire. There were no intruders. He stabbed himself.
Yeah.
He thought, like, Safra would be in the safe room for 15 minutes. He would save the day.
But, like, I agree all that. In addition, like, why was the will changed before the murders?
Yeah.
Why wasn't a single bodyguard on duty? The panic room code word thing is crazy to me.
You know, the one thing I've been thinking about but haven't really been saying is, like, is there any world in which Ted and Lily were working together?
Or Lily and the Russians worked together and they let Ted make a mess?
Maybe there were two plots happening at the same time and Ted just got to it first.
Maybe,
like, Ted did the dirty work for... Imagine you're Lily and you're planning to have the Russian mob kill your husband, but this fucking idiot Green Beret that you hire...
Also, like, what's the story there? What is the story with Ted being hired? Was
yeah.
he just a fucking patsy?
Right.
Like, was... I don't know any of this, because why on earth... You're a zillionaire. Why
yeah.
don't you have the best of the best, the most vetted... She put him in front of a psychiatrist
yeah.
who was like, no, he's good. Like, is he crazy? Is he easily manipulated? Like, how did Ted get here? Because it feels like he was just, like, picked out of obscurity.
Yeah.
Who was this family who was like, I know a guy in Monaco?
You know, at the end of the day, this all just comes down to, like, none of this would have happened if the guy wasn't a billionaire. You know what I mean?
And also, the responders waiting 3 hours to get up there is unconscionable.
Well, and that's the whole other thing. Nobody planned for they're going to have to clear 22 floors of a parking garage before they can put out the fire. That's insane.
Like, what? I think maybe, the lighting the fire is the closest thing to the truth, but there are a lot of questions here. Who's just like, oh, yeah, I'll just lose $50 million cost of doing business of this weird real
uh-huh.
estate deal? Like, I know billionaires are fucking crazy, but, like, to just drop 50 mil with the Russians and this guy's wife, I don't know.
It's insane. Oh my God, girl. We did a murder in Monaco. That was crazy.
This is a crazy, crazy ride. People were dying for us to do this.
Yeah. Look, this is another one. If you are listening to this on the audio version, go to YouTube. Go to YouTube. This one was wild. We had a lot of fun. This was really fucking crazy.
Crazy. Justice for Vivian, too,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, totally. What are we doing next?
We are doing Satan Wants You. Ooh. It is the beginnings, the genesis of Satanic Panic.
Oh.
Which is really a book, basically like Go Ask Alice, but for Satanic Panic.
No way.
And the whole story about like how it actually happened and like the woman and the guy behind it.
All right. Well, fam, stay tuned for the trailer for that. Join the Facebook group. Join us on Patreon. Join us on the Discord. Yep. We love you.
The good thing about Satan is that Satan doesn't care about you.
He doesn't.
So Satan wants you. Like, Satanists are very selfish. Yeah. I say with love.
Do you believe in the devil?
I believe in things.
I believe that. I don't believe. Daisy asked me the other day if I believed in heaven, and I said yes. And she said, do you believe in the devil? And I said no.
No, I think there are things. I think things creep in.
Yeah.
Other things in the world. But anyway, we'll get to
beginning. All right, we'll talk about it all next week.
Panic.
Oh, my God. All right, we love you, fam.
We love you.
Bye.
Bye.
Joining me now from Victoria is Michelle Smith, a one-time victim of abuse by a satanic cult, and Dr. Lawrence Pazder, the psychiatrist who helped her come to terms with that nightmare.
The book is called Michelle Remembers.
Michelle Remembers. We wrote it together.
The first publicized account of such rituals.
They would put me in cages, sacrifice animals,
eating feces and orgies and dismembering fetuses. These were things that you experienced.
That's right.
Who are these people?
Well, they're a secret organization, a secret society.
When that book came out, I mean, all hell broke loose.
It was a theory that there's a satanic conspiracy and there are children who are kidnapped, stolen, and sacrificed.
It's known as the Satanic Panic in the 1980s and 90s. I consulted on hundreds of these cases all over the Western world.
And all of this was started by this book.